Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, December 22nd, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. State Board of Education takes steps towards University of Idaho, University of Utah partnership for medical school, likely in the state of Idaho on a campus. Washington Governor Bob Ferguson wants to spend $250 million on housing during the next budget. Idaho downwinders eligible for reparations. And Fruitland, Idaho residents speak against planned fracking. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The Avista power outage map shows as of this afternoon, 9 remaining customers without power from last week's windstorms, all of them in the Silver Valley in the Panhandle. Meanwhile, Clearwater Power's outage map, which supplies power for parts of Latah, Clearwater, Nez Perce, and Benoit counties, showed 1,360 customers without power as of this afternoon from last week's windstorms. Of those, more than 1,000 were in Clearwater County, approximately 120 in Latah County, about 150 in Nez Perce County, about 75 in Lewis County, and 18 in Benoit County. In Washington, Clearwater Power reported 15 customers in Assotin County were still without power as of this afternoon, and 0 customers were without power in Whitman and Garfield counties. This year's congressional budget includes one-time payments to downwinders in Idaho, New Mexico, and Utah who are still alive and received radiation from nuclear bomb tests in Nevada during the Cold War. The payments are going to radiation survivors who lived in the three states between 1951 and 1962 and who have one of 19 types of cancer. The payments also cover those who lived in certain parts of Nevada and Arizona during that time period. The Lewiston Tribune reports the federal government has so far approved 400 claims under the expansion of the 1990 Radiation Exposure Act this year. Downwinder Tona Henderson, who grew up in Emmett, Idaho, told the Tribune survivors do not need an attorney to fill out the federal paperwork for compensation. The forms include evidence of residency during the time period and evidence of cancer diagnosis. People who file claims can use state and city archives, libraries, and Idaho's Cancer Data Registry to provide evidence of their claims. Emmett is in Gem County, where Henderson grew up, one of 5 of the hardest hit counties as radioactive iodine 131 spread over the West after the nuclear tests. Dose reconstruction studies over the decades have determined the other most impacted counties are Custer, Blaine, and Lemmy in Idaho and Meagher County in Montana. Henderson said her mom had breast cancer and her older brother had 3 bouts of cancer over a period of 8 months. The Whitman County Sheriff's Office reports someone discovered a corpse near Colfax this morning near the South Palouse River Road. A news release from the county said the corpse had decomposed to the point where they could not immediately determine the gender of the person who died. The Lewiston Tribune website reports the Whitman County Coroner has the remains and is working with the Washington State Patrol Crime Lab, which is assisting with collecting evidence. You're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Idaho's endowment lands benefit schools, but the greater benefits could go to the forestry industry. Endowment lands have been around since the westward expansion after the American Revolution. Logging, land sales, and lease agreements on these lands go to the endowment fund for the state's schools. They are governed statewide by the Land Board, which is managed by the Idaho Department of Lands. James Lay with the Selkirk Conservation Alliance notes that the Land Board acts to maximize revenue on these lands for schools. However, the fund provided just $200 per K-12 student in 2024.
You can make the argument that the Land Board and the IDL are here as fiduciaries for the Idaho wood products industry rather than for the kids. And this is the thing that, I guess, galls me the most.
Lay notes that the annual cost for educating one student in West Bonner County School District is about $13,500. The Land Board has announced a record $68 million from endowment lands for K-12 education. However, that's a small portion of more than $2.5 billion lawmakers set aside for public school maintenance this year. A recent report found Idaho had the lowest per pupil funding level in the country. Lay says policy changes surrounding timber could be contributing to less revenue from endowment lands. The Idaho Department of Lands used to operate with the understanding that harvesting and subsequent regeneration took 80 years, but in recent decades, the industry has said that time should be cut in half. Lay says even 45 years is not enough to sustain reharvest. He adds that the Selkirk Conservation Alliance has found elevated levels of the nutrient phosphorus in Priest Lake tributaries near logging.
We just have concerns that that rotation is too quick, and there's also concerns about depleting nutrients from the soils.
Lay says the state shouldn't rely so heavily on an industry that could look different in the future, especially if timber harvesting shifts to the country south.
As investors, they're banking on a very cyclical industry that in some years may not make any money at all. They're putting all their eggs in one basket. Here. And it just does not seem to me that that's the responsible thing to do if you have a better alternative at hand.
For Northern Rockies News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
KRFP is supported by listeners like you and Rembrandt Tree Care, family owned and operated since 1977. A conscientious approach to urban forestry with year-round tree service on the Palouse and surrounding areas. You can reach Rembrandt Tree Care at 509-330-0699.
KRFP thanks all of its donors and underwriters for helping make this programming possible.
The state representative who co-sponsored Idaho's tax money for private schools bill this year will resign from the legislature to take a job with the Trump administration. Republican Representative Wendy Horman of Idaho Falls said she will resign effectively January 5th to become Office of Child Care Director. That's part of the Federal Administration for Children and Families. Horman is in her seventh term in the state legislature and is co-chair of the powerful Joint Finance Appropriations Committee. While she was co-chair, the Joint Finance Appropriations Committee changed the process for writing and approving budgets this year, separately approving base budgets for operating expenses early in the session, and then debating and approving enhancement budgets to cover new programs later on. The 20 members of the Joint Committee sparred over the new process. House Bill 93, the Taxpayer Money for Private and Religious Schools Bill, called the School Choice Bill, created a $50 million private school tax credit for parents who can afford to send their children to private schools, while the legislature was also approving $450 million in income tax cuts, which mainly help wealthier Idahoans. A coalition of opponents, including the Moscow School District, has sued at the state Supreme Court level, saying the program violates the state constitution because it violates the clause that says the legislature shall provide a thorough system of free public schools. The critics say it also violates the Idaho Constitution's Blaine Amendment, which prohibits taxpayer money from going to religious indoctrination, but opponents are not mentioning that in the lawsuit. At last week's Idaho State Board of Education meeting, the board approved a bridge agreement that would create a medical education partnership between the University of Idaho and the University of Utah. The agreement requires the University of Idaho to spend $600,000 to begin working with the University of Utah on a framework for the new medical school. University of Idaho Chief of Staff Sonny Wallace told the Ed Board the University of Idaho will also provide $600,000 for the process. The Idaho Education News reports the joint medical school program could be located on a campus in Idaho, possibly the UI Water Center building in downtown Boise. The State Board of Education started studying ways to address the state's physician shortage in August. The Ed Board released the Idaho Medical Education Working Group's draft report December 1st, laying out a menu of approaches for addressing the state's physicians shortage. The final report is due January 2nd. The working group plans to recommend Idaho invest in additional seats to augment its 50-year partnership with the University of Washington's multi-state physician education program known as WAMI. Idaho currently subsidizes Idaho students' tuition for the 40 Idaho seats in the program, costing the state $7.6 million per year. The Idaho Education News reported earlier this month expanding the number of WAMI seats would violate a new Idaho law that requires the state subsidize 10 new medical school seats per year over the next 3 years, but none at WAMI. The University of Idaho, which hosts the WAMI program in Idaho, lobbied against the bill that passed because it wants to either maintain or expand its partnership with the University of Washington. The report says the state could subsidize additional medical school seats at the University of Utah at its Salt Lake City campus. Currently, Idaho subsidizes 10 seats at the University of Utah, costing the state $3.1 million per year. Washington Governor Bob Ferguson has proposed spending $244 million on housing in his proposed budget for the next fiscal year. Ferguson said in a news conference last week, the state is facing a housing crisis. He said, it's not really unique to our state. I talk to governors across the country. This is an issue that comes up all the time. The need for more housing is something that is urgent in our state and in many communities across the country. I'm often asked, hey, you went to all 39 counties. What issue did you hear about the most in going to all 39 counties? And the answer was always the same, more housing, more housing, more housing. It really didn't matter what part of the state I was in, but that was something I heard about over and over and over again from Washingtonians on both sides of the mountains in communities large and small. The budget proposal would send $225 million in bonds to the state's housing trust fund that would preserve or build more than 4,000 units. According to the Spokesman Review, the governor signaled he will support a proposal from Democratic Senator Emily Alvarado of West Seattle, which would require jurisdictions with growth management plans under the state's Growth Management Act to permit residential and mixed-use development in areas that are currently zoned commercial. Alvarado said, in our state, there is underused land within urban growth areas where housing is compatible, but right now it's not allowed to be built in commercial zones and in mixed-use zones. These are places where we're already planning for future urban development. There are tens of thousands of parcels where housing is prohibited and where real barriers make development infeasible. The Washington Department of Commerce says the state will need to build around 1.1 million new units of housing over the next 19 years, with at least half of the units designated as affordable housing. Some Fruitland residents spoke against a proposed oil and gas drilling site near U.S. Highway 95 last week. The company Snake River Oil and Gas wants to build the site near Northwest 16th Street in Fruitland and has filed an application with the state for a forced integration order for property owners who have not yet signed agreements with the company to allow the drilling. During a public hearing Wednesday at Fruitland City Hall, resident Charles Ate said, I have several objections to this, and really they all have to do with the fact that the proposed drilling site is very close to residential areas. There can be a lot of people that are living very close to there, and I think there's definitely some risks that are involved with oil and gas having wells. The spacing unit is very close to many residences in the city of Portland and Payette County, and drilling and extraction operations, which have some inherent environmental risks, should not be conducted so close to people's homes. The Idaho Capital Sun reports owners of 61% of the acres in the spacing unit have signed leases with Snake River Oil and Gas. That leaves owners of about 38% of the land who have not signed. Idaho has a forced integration law that says a drilling or fracking company that secures leases from the owners of at least 55% of the land in a spacing unit can apply for an integration order to force the other landowners to accept payments for the use of their land for drilling.
The Trump administration has announced its intent to weaken the rules that require oil and gas companies to clean up and plug wells that are no longer in use on public lands. The U.S. has more than 130,000 abandoned oil and gas wells on public lands across the country, which can leak methane and other harmful gases into the air and waterways if they aren't plugged. David Jenkins, president of Conservatives for Responsible Stewardship, says it will cost taxpayers about $753 billion to clean up the wells.
We have an administration that is deciding to side with scammers over hardworking American taxpayers and choosing to do something that's fiscally irresponsible. There's nothing conservative about it.
Due to a thick layer of basalt covering much of the state, Oregon has a relatively small number of oil and gas wells compared to other states. However, Jenkins emphasizes that federal funds will be used to plug orphaned wells, so the problem impacts every taxpayer. Jenkins explains there are an average of 12 wells per lease, and cleaning them up requires plugging the well and removing all the equipment. He says when oil and gas companies get close to the end of their production cycle, they will often sell the well to a smaller company who will extract the last bit of oil, then that company will sell it to another company.
And then that shell company is just designed to go bankrupt. And then that's how they get away with leaving taxpayers holding the bag. It's like a giant shell game.
Jenkins adds it was just last year that a new law made oil and gas companies put up a bond that would cover the cost of cleaning up the wells before they started drilling. He says the planned rollback follows the recently passed One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which opened more than 200 million acres of public land to drilling. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
When it comes to conservation in Montana, you may not think of hunters and anglers as leading the charge, but some are trying to change that. Eric Cluess loves to hunt and fish near his home in Helena. He also works for Defenders of Wildlife, a group devoted to protecting wild animals in their habitat. He says it's frustrating when people assume hunters and anglers don't care about the environment.
There's this misconception that hunting and angling is about getting out there and killing or disrespecting wildlife. It's not what it is at all. If you think about who humans are just as a species, we are hunters and anglers, and it wasn't that long ago that that's how we survived.
Cluess says both activities are great ways to immerse yourself in nature and appreciate the plants, animals, geography, weather patterns, and landscape, all things that make a wild place special and unique. He argues there is a lot that unites anglers, hunters, and other outdoor enthusiasts, and they need to work together to protect open spaces near them. Cluess believes hunters and anglers started what is considered the modern conservation movement back in the late 1800s, when U.S. westward expansion decimated wild game.
They were going out in the landscape and realizing we kind of messed up. We had lost a lot of the wildlife that made this country and this landscape really special, and they started advocating for protections to restore that wildlife.
Cluess feels many of those protections are now threatened by the Trump administration. He cites the president's attempts to sell off public lands and the Fix Our Forests Act, a pending bipartisan bill intended to fight wildfires. It's passed the U.S. House and is waiting for a Senate vote. The legislation would allow prescribed burning and forest thinning in high wildfire risk areas. However, critics say it would remove environmental reviews and allow logging in national forests. Cluess opposes it and says all outdoor lovers need to speak up against efforts like these.
If we let the politics of the times divide us, then there's no way we can actually unite our voices to stand up for the things that we care about and the things that are the kind of the base level that provides an avenue for us to enjoy the things that we enjoy.
I'm Laura Hatch, Big Sky Connection.
Washington's Caregivers Union is denouncing federal cuts to Medicaid, known in the state as Apple Health, which are expected to result in 350,000 residents losing health insurance and the possible closure of over a dozen rural hospitals. About 60% of nursing home residents and 40% of adults with disabilities rely on Medicaid in Washington. Brenda Morgan is on the board with SEIU 775, the Caregivers Union, and has been a caregiver for about 23 years. She helps her client with daily tasks like dressing, bathing, and transportation, and she worries about how the cuts will impact her.
Seeing her suffer, seeing her so worried about what HR 1 will do, it breaks my heart. So I told her, as long as I can, I will continue fighting for her and for every person that needs to be on Medicaid.
SEIU 775 represents over 55,000 caregivers across Washington, Montana, and Alaska, and many of the members rely on Medicaid funding for their livelihood. The cuts passed in July through H.R. 1, otherwise known as the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, are the largest cuts to Medicaid in history, totaling over $700 billion. They're expected to take health insurance away from nearly 14 million people nationally. Proponents of the cuts argue it's necessary to reduce wasteful spending. Gloria B. has been a caretaker of her father for 4 years. She says he depends on Medicaid to pay for his chemotherapy, and she doesn't understand why the cuts need to be so drastic.
That doesn't make any sense to me. These people worked for a long time. They retired. They need a way to be able to sustain themselves.
Proponents of Medicaid say H.R. 1 also makes it harder for people to enroll and stay enrolled by creating more red tape and adding work requirements. A poll from earlier this year found 97% of adults in the U.S. believe Medicaid is at least somewhat important for their community. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
And that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, mostly cloudy tonight, low 32. 50% chance of rain after 10 a.m. tomorrow. Snow level 3,400 feet, rising to 4,500 feet in the afternoon. Cloudy otherwise, high around 40. 50% chance of rain, mainly before 10 p.m. Tuesday night, mostly cloudy, steady temperature 39. 50% chance of rain Wednesday, cloudy, high 44. East winds 10 to 15, becoming southwest in the afternoon. Winds could gust up to 25. On Wednesday night, 30% chance of rain, mainly after 4 a.m. Otherwise, mostly cloudy. Snow level 4,400 feet, low 35. 60% chance of rain Christmas Day, mainly after 4 p.m. Snow level 4,900 feet, partly sunny, high 46. Thursday night, 80% chance of rain, snow level 4,600 feet, low 35. And 70% chance of rain and snow Friday, snow level 3,300 feet, mostly cloudy, high 41. Currently 39 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast to hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the newscast to hear during Morning Mix, and the music and public and the music and entertainment shows you hear every day here on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. And look for the KRFP end of the year fundraising letter in your mailbox now. I'm Lee Robartis. Have a good night. Flashpoints is coming up next. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Extinction Rebellion Palouse proudly supports KRFP. XR Palouse is organizing to have our governments and institutions declare a climate emergency, achieve climate justice and biodiversity, and leverage the power of arts and humanities to foster social change. KRFP is dedicated to progressive values, including justice and multiculturalism.
KRFP, Moscow is the best in the USA.
Yeah.
If you want to support local, spontaneous media before it's buried in an ocean of AI.
If you want to keep the power, humor, and love in the hands of the community rather than in the hands of some outside global authoritarian movement that's descending on the Palouse like a mile-high haboob.
What is a haboob?
It's like a gigantic dust storm.
If you want your music locally curated by your friends and acquaintances in the community rather than by some algorithm telling you to go more and more bland.
Go bland. Then you should support KRFP. The KRFP fundraising letter with its handy return envelope may be in your pile of mail. Check the pile right now. Donations accepted in any form.
Well, almost any form.
In any amount.
Any donation dated before January 1st is tax deductible.
Donations accepted in any form and in any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That address again, KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Always having